Hello and welcome to Snow Country Stories Japan, or should I say welcome back. This is episode 25 of the podcast, the first of season 3, and also marks 1 year since the podcast began. That means it's once again spring in Japan, and with that we're emerging from another winter in the snow country and heading into the warmth and melting snow of spring. Spring, summer, and autumn offer just as many reasons to visit Japan's snow country, and I'm looking forward to doing just that by exploring more of the snow country in the season to come. Today's episode kicks off season 3 by heading north to Hokkaido and on to Japan's largest national park, Daisetsuzan. Established in 1934, Daisetsuzan was one of Japan's original 8 national parks, a list that has now grown to 34. At 2,300 square kilometres, nothing has changed since 1934, and Daisetsuzan remains the largest national park in Japan. The Japanese government is starting to promote its system of national parks to international visitors. This is a fantastic thing, as Japan really is home to some wonderful parks, among which many consider Daisetsuzan to be the most impressive. In exploration of Daisetsuzan in today's episode, I speak with Richard Smith, a guide working with Adventure Hokkaido. As the name suggests, Adventure Hokkaido is a Hokkaido-based tour company offering small hiking, cycling, and nature tours to many of the island's most rewarding destinations, including but not limited to Daisetsuzan. As a guide with Adventure Hokkaido, Richard knows Daisetsuzan very well, and as such, I really enjoyed speaking with him. He paints a really enticing picture. As you'll hear, his knowledge and enthusiasm shines through. A big thank you to him and Adventure Hokkaido for agreeing to the interview. Adventure Hokkaido operates tours throughout the year. You can find more information on their website, adventure-hokkaido.com, or follow them on Instagram at @adhokkaidotours and Facebook at Adventure Hokkaido. Make sure to check out today's episode page on the Snow Country Stories Japan website, that's snowcountrystories.com, for images, a map showing you where Daisetsuzan is, and more information and links to everything we discuss. And listen on after my chat with Richard for information about how to get to Daisetsuzan. If you have not done so yet, I'd love for you to subscribe to, rate, and review the podcast on whichever app you're listening on. And of course, sharing it with friends and family is also a big help. Thank you indeed to everybody who is listening. I hope you enjoy. My guest on the podcast today is Richard Smith, a guide with the Hokkaido-based tour company Adventure Hokkaido. Richard, thank you for joining me today. And to begin, how are you and where are you speaking from?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm good, thanks. I'm speaking from Higashikawa, which is a small town in Hokkaido in between Asahikawa and the Daisetsuzan Mountains.
And we're speaking in, it's early March. What's the winter been like up there this year?
It's been pretty good. I'd say it's been quite average. Like we've definitely had, you know, a pretty good level of snow, but snow's maybe been a bit more inconsistent this year compared to previous years. But I mean, an average season in Hokkaido is still probably better than anywhere else in the world, so you can't complain too much.
That's what they say. So obviously, today we're going to be chatting about Daisetsuzan National Park and the tours offered there by Adventure Hokkaido. Would you mind, before we do that, mind sharing a little of your own story? Where are you originally from and how did you end up working as a guide in Hokkaido?
Yeah, so I'm originally from a small group of islands off the coast of the UK called the Isles of Scilly. So I kind of grew up on the water, grew up with a kind of love of being outdoors, but it's mainly, you know, sailing and being out on the ocean. But then I'm in a roundabout way, I found myself in Japan via the mountains of Canada, and I kind of switched my interest into snow sports. And then, wound up sticking around here year round. And it's actually during COVID, I applied for a job up in the national park working at Mount Asahidake, doing kind of, it's a ranger like job, but we're not allowed to call ourselves rangers because the national park rangers get upset. But that company was kind of the same founders as Adventure Hokkaido. So they kind of shoulder tapped me and said, you know, when overseas tourists come back, would you like to guide? So that's, how I wound up guiding here in the summers.
Oh, fantastic. I'm sure it's a nice lifestyle. So you're based there all year round. So how does your guiding vary between seasons from winter to the summer?
Yeah, so I also work as a ski guide for a separate company. And so, you know, kind of January, February, pretty busy with that. And then you know, out skiing on similar mountains, but definitely kind of a different style of guiding. Like I think people are more focused just on getting the powder and having good time skiing, and then yeah, a nice bit of downtime in between seasons, and then kind of hiking and cycling season picks up from late May. And then kind of do longer trips, kind of travel with the guests a bit more. But it's nice to have a bit of a varied style of guiding.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds quite an idyllic lifestyle. So it sounds like that's home for you. No intentions of going anywhere soon.
Yeah. I think we're pretty settled here. It's a nice spot. Like my wife works in Asahikawa, so she's still got kind of access to a reasonable city. And then I'm about an equal distance up to the mountain. So we're in a good spot here.
Yeah, terrific. So the main focus of today's conversation is going to be Daisetsu-san. So Daisetsu-san is one of 34 national parks in Japan, and at 2,300 square kilometers, that's around, according to Google, that's around 570,000 acres. It's the largest national park in the country, and I guess many would say it's the most impressive of those parks. So Richard, can I ask you, when did you first visit Daisetsu-san, and can you recall your first impressions of the park?
I first visited Daisetsu-san, you know, about 8 years ago. I just came up ski touring. Like I was living elsewhere in Hokkaido and just wanted to, you know, see what the skiing was like. So came up ski touring, and back then there weren't that many people out skiing in the mountains. I remember getting up high on Mount Furano and looking down at the kind of plains filled with snow beneath me. It's quite a kind of impressive feeling being kind of up on the edge of these higher mountains. They're a lot higher than a lot of the other peaks around in Hokkaido. So it always kind of struck me as this impressive like mountain range sitting above the farming land around it. And I always kind of, you know, I wanted to come back and explore it a bit more. And then I almost feel like I had a second first impression the first time I came here in summer, because having, you know, skied quite a lot in the national park, then it was I was walking around and like, oh, there's flowers underneath the snow here. There's a hiking trail here. There's a lake here. Like the whole landscape when it's buried in snow is quite different. And there's actually, you know, a lot of life, a lot of color, a lot of vibrancy to it in summer, which is actually quite surprising.
So how many seasons have you spent guiding at Daisetsu-san now?
I've done 3 seasons ski guiding, and this will be coming into my, I guess, second full winter. Like we did a few tours in the tail end of COVID for people who were already in the country, but they really kind of kicked into full gear last year once the borders were reopened properly.
And obviously Hokkaido is home to quite a number of national parks. How would you say Daisetsu-san compares to the other parks that are up there?
I'd say like Daisetsu-san is a lot more alpine in the terrain, because the mountains are higher, they're kind of exposed a bit more to the weather, so it doesn't take long to get kind of up above tree lines. It's quite kind of dramatic alpine rocky landscape. And then it's also, I think, it definitely feels faster, like when you're up on say the summit of Mount Sahidake looking east out over the Ohachidaira Caldera, like it feels like a huge vast open mountain range. You can't really see many traces of human existence.
Yeah, and that was certainly, I've only been there once many years ago, and that was my impression, because it was one of the first times, one of the few times in Japan that I felt like I was out in space and there weren't many people around. Coming from Australia, it's an experience that I somewhat miss about being able to get away from development and things like this. So it's kind of I found it to me, it was kind of a striking experience for that reason. I wasn't expecting that in Japan. Now, the park includes, I believe, different mountain groups, and within those groups, there are 16 peaks over 2,000 meters. That's around 6,600 feet and above. You've touched on a few there, but what are the major mountains of Daisetsu-san?
Say you can kind of group it into kind of 3 distinct sections. You have kind of North Daisetsu-san, which I think the most kind of well-known or obvious peak is Mount Sahidake, which is the highest mountain in Hokkaido, and then there's a few other volcanoes nearby that are 2,000 meter plus and kind of this high plateau area. And then the ridgeline kind of stretches along and still stays quite high elevation. And then in the central desert zone, you've got a mountain called Mount Tomaroshi, which is quite remote compared to the others. A lot less infrastructure to get in and out of that central section, but it's a really popular peak with Japanese hikers. I think it's a bucket list one for Japanese hikers. Like a lot of the Japanese guides, they spend a lot of time taking people up there. And then the ridgeline from there stretches on further south, and you have kind of the Mount Tokachi end of the range, and it's another kind of collection of mountains, almost like running in a line with Mount Tokachi, which is actually an active volcano sat in the middle of the range. So yeah, it splits up into kind of three distinct sections.
And you touched there on the hiking season. When is the hiking season in Daisetsu-san?
Depending on how comfortable you are hiking on snow, it doesn't really start until late May into June. There's snow on the trails even in June, but keen hikers, people that are comfortable using spikes or crampons when it's icy in the morning, you can get out from May. But the actual, it doesn't feel like just summer hiking until mid to late June, and then that runs through until kind of late September. The high peaks usually get the first snow in late September into October, and then again, if you're keen and you're happy to kind of push through snow and post hole, then you can still get out hiking, but the kind of experience then changes and it becomes a bit more harsh and hardcore hiking experience.
Yeah. And I guess this following on from that, and this is probably quite a broad question, but what are the hiking trails like? I mean, how demanding are they?
They are surprisingly demanding, I'd say. I've guided people that have spent 60, 70 years of their life hiking in the Austrian Alps. I've guided people who've run hiking tours around the world, and everyone is quite taken back with how rough the trails are. It's a combination of, I think, a lack of maintenance and the kind of harsh weather. It's actually, you don't realize it when you're walking, but there is a layer of permafrost across a lot of the mountains, and the water doesn't drain very well. So all the trails get a lot of runoff with the snow melt and heavy rain. So the trails are actually very eroded. They're quite rocky, uneven. So a really common thing I hear from people hiking is it's very difficult to get in a rhythm. So distances you'd normally cover in not that long when you're just striding out and stretching your legs, because you can't find your rhythm, actually takes more time and more effort than people usually think it does.
Yeah, that's really interesting to listen to, because I think it can be deceptive, right? Because comparatively to, hiking in other areas of the world, Europe, North America, South America, those mountains, when you say 2,000 meters and above, they're not remarkably high. And so I guess some people come across here and are surprised by the level of difficulty. That's interesting to hear. And that leads me on to the next point that I read about actually in preparing for today's interview, was that while the average elevation of the alpine areas in the park is around 2,000 meters, given the higher latitude of the island of Hokkaido, the park is equivalent to the environments found at 3,000 meters and above in the alpine areas of the main island of Honshu, around the mountains of where I am. So it's a very similar environment, despite it being notably lower. Does that explanation kind of ring true to you? And how would you describe those alpine areas of the park?
Yeah, it sounds quite accurate. From what I've seen down in the main island, there's definitely a bit of a difference in the elevation that you find these kind of exposed alpine areas. And I think actually that word exposed is probably the best way to describe it, because not just the kind of colder temperatures from being up at elevation, there's very little shelter. The tree line is usually anywhere between 1,100 meters to 1,600-700 meters. It's very low. So above tree line, we do have those Japanese stone pine trees a little bit higher, but it means if the weather does turn on you, you're actually very exposed, and there's not even many good rocks to hide behind. You can just be out there on a ridgeline. So I think that exposure combined with, you know, the fact that we are a bit further north, bringing the temperatures down does, yeah, make it deceptively nasty when the weather's bad, given the relatively low elevation.
Yeah, interesting. And you just, again, you just touched on a little bit on there on some of the vegetation that you encounter in the park. What's it generally like? You mentioned the tree line is actually quite low comparatively, and then you have above the tree line some kind of unique alpine flora. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we have kind of split into three bands. You know, tree line is usually firs, and we have a lot of birch trees right at the top of tree line. They're usually the ones that push highest, so we have, you know, Japanese rowan as well, so it's quite pretty in autumn. And then above that is the kind of a band of usually the Japanese stone pine, which is that small stone pine tree that kind of grows along the ground, and you kind of see little stands of it, and you can really understand where they got the inspiration of bonsai from. And then the next kind of level above that, kind of up on the even higher, where the ground is very rocky and even the stone pines can't take hold, we have kind of scatterings of alpine flowers. We have like a lot of illusion avens, which are like a small white flower. The Japanese call them chingaruma, because it looks like a baby cat's wheels when it goes all wispy and seed-like in spring. But we get big carpets of those, and it's quite impressive in July when they're in flower. It's huge carpets of white. And then have a lot of very hardy alpine flowers that have all range of colors. So yeah, it's quite a nice place to hike in like the wildflower season, because what is usually quite a rocky barren landscape comes kind of alive with color. And both, again, it's contrasts of wide fields of whites and pinks, or like just little individual hardy flowers clinging on for life in spots. So nice variety.
Yeah, it sounds actually very beautiful, mate. You paint a very nice picture there. And in addition to vegetation, what animals are within the park, and what are the most likely animals you might encounter on any of your tours?
The ones we encounter most commonly on our tours, kind of starting up in the high mountains, we see chipmunks quite often. Like, you'll see them running around the rocks. And then I've also seen quite a few fox, even up in the alpine, I think probably chasing the chipmunks and the mice. And then lower down, you see deer everywhere. Like, they're kind of in the forest of the park. Like, there's a lot of deer now, to the point they're almost becoming a problem. So it's kind of the most common ones, but I think the more perhaps exciting ones that you don't see every time you go out, but you can see. We have, you know, brown bear up here. They're a little bit different to the black bears in Honshu, but they're larger, quite closely related to the grizzly. And they actually, you know, they live at all elevations here. There's a mother and cubs kept one of the major campsites up in the mountains here closed for a good time last summer, because they were just hanging out on a snow patch opposite the campsite.
Their terrain. Have you on your tours before, have you encountered the brown bear?
I actually haven't encountered them on the hiking tours, and I put that probably down to the fact that we actively make noise to alert them of our presence, because I'd love to see them in the mountains, but you don't want to see them too close and give them a surprise. So I've definitely come across fresh scat, I've smelt them, so I know they've been around, but we make an effort to not kind of run into them and surprise them. But on other tours in other national parks, we've definitely seen quite a lot of them in the Shiratoko National Park, where they're more common than humans almost. Still hoping maybe this summer is the day that I can see one at a distance that's comfortable for both of us on a hiking trail. Yeah, I think that's the kind of thing that I find really interesting about the brown bear, because they're a very large animal, and they could actually do quite a lot of damage to you if they wanted to, but they're actually not usually that interested in bothering a human. So that's what I say, kind of like, if you're at a good distance and they're happy with where you are, they're not even going to bat an eyelid at you, and it'd be a really nice experience to see them up there. But yeah, it's just if they feel a bit threatened by you, or perhaps you're between them and a cub, then they're liable to, I think, do quite a lot of damage.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, it is their terrain, isn't it, in the end? In addition to that, obviously, given your experience there as a guide, what else do you consider the highlights of Daisetsu-san?
For me, growing up in the UK, where, you know, you don't really have volcanic or seismic activity, and the volcanic nature of the park, I find really interesting. Like, you know, Mount Asahidake is, okay, it hasn't erupted for a couple of thousand years, but there's still steam billowing out of fumaroles up there. It's very still active, and that's kind of a unique experience. And then Mount Tokachi in the southern end of the range, like, you know, that erupts every 30, 40 years. Actually hasn't erupted for about 40 years now, so everyone's a bit nervous. But it's really incredible to see these, you know, volcanoes with steam coming out of craters, or, like, you know, walking through a landscape that has changed in geological terms actually quite recently. It's something that certainly where I grew up, like, wouldn't imagine experiencing.
Likewise for me. It's one of the reasons I love getting up to the volcanoes in this area as well. And with that in mind, given that there's active volcanoes within the park, I assume that equals that there are also hot springs. Is that the case?
One of the extra bonuses of the volcanic activities. Yeah, we have some pretty good hot springs all around the park. Once you're up in the towns and the villages, or, you know, the hotels close to the park, like, they'll have good hot springs. So, for example, Mount Asahidake, there's Asahidake Onsen at the bottom with a number of hotels. And then there's another one called Hakuginso, which is near the trailhead for Mount Tokachi, that has really good, it's quite acidic water. It's got an amazing outdoor pool where you can look up at the mountains. And that one's interesting too, that they say that the onsen water actually increased by about 20 degrees just before the last eruption. So you really can see how it's tied together.
Was anybody in it at the time? That's always...
apparently it was actually, it was colder at the time and the temperature went up and it stayed up. So the fact that it's actually a good temperature without heating now is perhaps thanks to the last eruption.
Adventure Hokkaido operates a six-day hiking tour within Daisetsu-san. Richard, can you provide an overview of that tour? When's it available and what's involved?
Yeah, so our six-day tour is kind of designed to give basically anybody a good taste of the hiking in the Daisetsu-san. It's the easier of the two tours we do offer in the park. We run it from June through to September, so kind of tying into that hiking season, and the hiking feels more like hiking than snow walking. And it's a collection of day hikes. Quite commonly get asked about, you know, through hiking in the Daisetsu-san, because I think a lot of people who say walk the Kumano Kodo or the Nakasendo want to do a similar thing up in the national park here. But the through hiking here is quite extreme. Like, you have to, you know, you don't have surface huts or anything. So it's quite beyond most people, or a lot of people. So instead we designed our tour with basically the best day hikes, and we'll travel around staying different hotels and use them as jumping off spots for the day hikes. So, you know, the first day we go up Mount Korodake, which is one of the older peaks in the north of the park. Then we hike through some alpine ponds in a kind of habitat that's really alive with bears. There's a lot of vegetation that they like eating. And the next day we're down the southern end of the park, going up a rocky lava dome that's home to little northern pika that you can see scurrying around the rocks. And then we come back round to the Mount Tokachi area, and we hike up a peak kind of sat in the middle of the mountains that gives us great views of all the volcanic landscape. And then we finish off with Mount Asahidake, the highest peak. So it's kind of traveling the whole circle around the park, and kind of the hikes are designed to give guests a taste of all the different landscapes you can find there.
And each night, as you mentioned, staying at a hotel, I assume, is it a hot spring hotel each night?
Yeah. Bar the last night where we finished in Asahikawa, which actually they do have a hot spring, but you know, it's a city hotel, and that gives us a good chance to go out for dinner. The rest of them are, like the hot spring hotels, and there's some really nice stays there actually.
Yeah, no doubt. And what's the group size of the tour, and which nationalities do you typically get booking it?
So the car tours, we usually run them as group tours. So we'll have kind of different groups, kind of couples, families, solo people all coming together. We cap the tours at 8 for our group tours. And then like we also have guided, you know, private groups, just kind of 4 to 6 people that have just come and booked a separate departure for us. But because of the nature of the trails being quite kind of narrow at times, because we like to use kind of smaller accommodation where we can, like we try and keep the group numbers relatively small. Like we don't really want to have that same feeling of the, you know, Japanese bus tours you see hiking around with 20-odd people traveling along behind the guide. This year it's looking a bit more of a mixture of, you know, people from Singapore, they also have Americans, Europeans, Australians. Like,
what level of fitness and experience is required, Richard, to kind of participate in the hiking tour?
So, I mean, the 6-day tour is designed to be accessible to anybody that is, you know, fit enough to hike all day. Like, we don't take on some of the longer or like more strenuous hikes. So you don't have to be, you know, a super experienced hiker, or don't have to be like the prime of your life, but you just need to really be fit enough to be comfortable on your feet all day, and kind of, I guess, able and steady enough on your feet that you can handle the kind of rocky, uneven terrain. But we want this tour to be accessible to anybody that's a kind of comfortable hiker, so they can get out and experience the park.
And for anyone who wants to join the tour, what gear do they need to bring with them?
As I said before, because it's day hikes, it's not through hikes, like you don't need to bring a huge multi-day backpack. So basically, you know, your usual travel gear, a good day pack that's able to carry all the water and food and layers you'd need. Like, you definitely need a bit more gear in your pack than perhaps you would if you used to, say, hiking in the lowlands, because you do need to be prepared for rain. Like I said, it's quite exposed up there, so you need to be able to cover yourself up if the wind gets up, the rain gets up, and have a warm layer if you it gets cold. And then another, I think, perhaps challenge or extra thing to think of with the Dyson Sedan is there's not actually much access to water on the trails. So you need to be able to carry enough water to get you through the day. We have a lot of guests ask about if they can, you know, do it in normal running shoes. And we say to most people, like, mid-cut hiking boots are definitely the better option. Like I said, the trails are quite uneven, so that extra ankle support really helps. People that are perhaps, you know, comfortable trail running on rough terrain definitely can be comfortable in trail runners, but I definitely, like, if you're a hiker and you've got a few different options of footwear you use, I'd lean towards the more sturdy, robust end, because otherwise you find you have very tired ankles by the end of the hike, and, you know, that's when you get hurt. You don't, because we're not kind of mountaineering, we're not, you know, using ropes or anything, don't really need any specialist equipment. It's just, yeah, being prepared both with gear and kind of physically for everything the mountains will throw at you, and, yeah, just being fit enough to keep moving all day long out in the elements.
Yeah, terrific. And Richard, you mentioned it was one of 2 tours that you do within Daisetsu-san. Is that correct? Can you give a bit of information about the other tours that Adventure Hokkaido offers?
Yeah, so we do another hiking tour partially in the Daisetsu-san. So we do a 9-day hiking tour that's split between the Daisetsu-san and the Akanmashi National Park. And that one, it was kind of graded a little bit higher. That's aimed at kind of very strong, fit hikers. So we cover more ground each day. We do bigger hikes and bigger climbs. But, you know, if you're a kind of strong hiker, that's a really good way to experience a lot of very good hiking across all of Hokkaido. And then we also do a cycling tour in the Dyset Cezanne that is also called the Around Dyset Cezanne Cycling Tour, and it is quite literally almost a full perfect loop around the Dyset Cezanne. And I think by accident we almost managed to get the distance to 360 kilometers as well. And that loops around the kind of roads at the foot of the park. So you're kind of dipping in and out of the park. And it's a really nice way to see a different side of the park. Like the roads are quiet and the kind of landscape's beautiful as you're riding.
And following on from that, what other tours does Adventure Hokkaido offer across the island and through different seasons? For example, are you also offering tours in winter?
Yes, so we do offer winter tours. We don't have any offerings in the Dyset Cezanne at the minute, but we do kind of, our winter tours are predominantly more kind of wildlife adventure tours. So they're not, you know, pure wildlife watching. Like, we don't go out at the crack of dawn and sit in a kind of camouflage net for 5 hours waiting for the animals, but we kind of combine seeing the animals in like an accessible way with other activities. Like, we'll do a drift ice walk during drift ice season. And that's mainly in eastern Hokkaido, because that place is incredible for wildlife over winter. Like, we get a lot of migratory birds, we get the cranes that I think everyone knows. So that's our kind of main focus of winter. And we do a little bit of snowshoeing on those tours too. But like I said, it's kind of a combination. So we do some snowshoeing, we'll go and do a cruise to see some birds. Like, it's a bit of everything. And then we also run a winter hiking or snowshoeing tour in the Shikatsu Toya National Park that's more geared towards, you know, the active hiking side of it. And we'll be using snowshoes to do kind of smaller distances. But then, and if you've ever been to Hokkaido, you've seen how much it snows. Like, that's already quite a lot of work pushing through deep snow.
Yeah, so I definitely hope this conversation motivates people to visit Daisetsu and to definitely get in touch with Adventure Hokkaido regarding your tours. However, if someone's listening and they wanted to visit the park by themselves for a day or overnight hike, is there any particular trails you'd recommend, and what should they do to prepare for the hikes there?
I would probably recommend heading to Mount Asahidake as a base, just because it gives you, you know, access of the ropeway up into basically the start of the alpine quite quickly. And then you can go up Mount Asahidake. You can, if you're fit, you can do a loop of about, I think, 11 kilometers over Asahidake and then round the back to this little remote onsen called Nakadake Onsen and then come back. Or you can, you know, do those as separate day hikes. Like, of all the areas, like Asahidake or maybe Sonkyo on the other side, like, they give you, if you don't have transport yourself, they give you the most kind of trails you can access from a hotel or a trailhead. But if you have transport or you're kind of happy to stay up in the mountains, also the Tokachidake, and these, like I said before, like, I find, you know, the volcanic landscape really impressive. So that would be another one I'd definitely recommend people visiting.
And you said earlier that there's no serviced lodges in the park.
Yeah, so there's a number of, they call them emergency shelters, and they're usually where the campsites are, but there's no actual serviced lodges. And even, like, you know, the huts, there's only a few of them that they actually allow you to stay in outside of an emergency. So most of the time, if you are doing, you know, those longer multi-day hikes, you're camping, and that means, you know, you're having to carry all your gear with you. And another, I think, thing that perhaps surprises people is there's also no toilets. Well, there's 5 toilets across the entire trail system in the park, and they're all in pretty bad condition. So there's a real issue with waste out on the trails and around the campsites. So now they really encourage people to pack it in and pack it out. So you take it's the bags they use during an earthquake. If the sewage goes out, you take a bag to pack your waste out with you. So it's another thing that adds to the kind of challenge, or like the load you have to carry when you're doing multi-day camping hikes. So it's definitely a bit more challenging and more kind of committing than hiking in some other places.
Yeah, and as you already mentioned, also access to water is an issue there. And so if you're going to be doing a multi-day hike and camping, that's going to be another consideration.
Yeah, so that's actually, it's another thing that a lot of people, even Japanese people, aren't aware of when they come up here, is it's not just that the mountains are quite dry. Like, you can find running water on many hikes, but the fox we have up here, they carry a parasite called echinococcus, which the foxes have it during its parasite phase, and then the eggs end up in their feces that run into the water. And if you happen to, you know, fill up your bottle from the stream as that's running through, you'll wind up with like the parasite in your gut, and 10 years later you have these big cysts and it could be fatal. So you, like, anyone in Hokkaido is raised to know that they don't drink the mountain water without either filtering it or boiling it. So yeah, it's another kind of surprising factor when you're walking past these lovely crystal clear streams that is still not quite worth the risk, and you do need to filter and boil any water you get up here.
Yeah, so much to take into consideration. I guess just another reason that makes a guided tour such an attractive option. And on that note, if anyone is interested to get in contact with Adventure Hokkaido about the tours that you offer, both in Daisetsu-san and elsewhere in Hokkaido, where can they get more information?
Yeah, so the best place to check out our tours is our website, which is Adventure Hokkaido with a hyphen in between Adventure and Hokkaido.com. And that lists all our tours. We also have a blog on there where we have quite a lot of useful tips, advice about traveling in Hokkaido, list of hikes, and just kind of give people a real taste of what you can do here, and kind of help people, even if they're not coming on tours, kind of figure out how to enjoy the outdoors here.
It's a nicely presented website. Looking at your website in preparation for the interview, I noticed you have both Japanese and foreign resident guides working for the company.
Yeah, so our team is kind of a mixture of kind of people who have found the home in Hokkaido, or people that are born and bred there, but we call ourselves local guides, and we kind of had a discussion about this recently. And like, for us, we see local as somebody that's, you know, passionate and in love with the area. And actually, you know, even like, we have guides, say, from Chiba near Tokyo who have moved up here, and they're often as knowledgeable and passionate about Hokkaido, if not more so, than your average local that you meet up here. So, we have a nice mixture to our team.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And also, I think it's good to have that mixture, because as a foreign resident guide myself here in Nagano, you take a different perspective to what somebody maybe born in the area does, and both have value to get those perspectives. But the website is very easy to navigate, very well presented, obviously with a clear focus on English-speaking guests. That's very evident through the website. And I know that you also have an Instagram and Facebook that where people can follow Adventure Hokkaido. So Richard, I think we've really covered it well today. I want to say a big thank you to making time to speak with me. I hope this piques people's interest in coming up to Daisetsu-san and getting in contact with Adventure Hokkaido, and maybe finding their way onto one of the tours that you guide. So yeah, again, thank you for chatting today, and good luck with the season to come.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me on here. Hopefully I'll see some more people up hiking around in the Daisetsu-san soon.
That's it for today's episode. Another big thank you to Richard and Adventure Hokkaido. You can find more information about all of their tours on their website, adventure-hokkaido.com, and follow them on Instagram at @adhokkaidotours and Facebook at Adventure Hokkaido. Their six-day hiking tour in Daisetsu-san operates from June to September, with many other tours available throughout the year. In terms of getting to Daisetsu-san, the size of the park means that your best means of transport and route will be different depending on where you are going. If headed straight to Daisetsu-san from outside of Hokkaido, for example from Tokyo, the most convenient option is to fly, noting that the nearest airport to Daisetsu-san is Asahikawa Airport, not New Chitose Airport, which services Sapporo, the largest city in Hokkaido. 90-minute flights operate from both of Tokyo's airports, that's Haneda and Narita, while there are also services from other cities in Japan to Asahikawa Airport. Shuttle buses run from the airport to Asahikawa Station in Asahikawa City, which serves as the main access point to the national park, with bus services operating to different points within it. Also worth noting that Adventure Hokkaido 6-day hiking tour begins in Asahikawa. If you're already in Sapporo, express train services run from Sapporo Station to Asahikawa Station in about 90 minutes. Another option is to drive yourself. It's exactly what I did when I visited Daisetsu-san several years ago. Rental outlets can be found throughout Hokkaido, with most major rental companies having English and other foreign language websites. If you're traveling in Japan with a Japan Rail Pass, Japan Rail also has rental car services with discounted rates for pass holders. Most international visitors will need an international driver's permit, and remember that we drive on the left in Japan, so it'll be familiar for anyone from Australia, New Zealand, India, Singapore, the UK, the countries that also drive on the left. But for those of you who don't, it might take a little adjusting. Should you choose to rent, always good to check in advance if the car's navigation system can be switched to English. For full details on how to get to Daisetsu-san, refer to the park's official website using the link included in today's show notes and on the episode page. My name is Peter Carnell. This has been Snow Country Stories Japan. I'll be back with the next episode of Season 3 in a couple of weeks' time. Until then, it's bye for now.